Good morning. My name's Julie, and I'm an Al-Anon. This is going to be pretty tough for me because I have a lot of friends in the audience and a couple of relatives. It's going to be a little more difficult. A couple of weeks ago, Gary and I were invited down to speak at a gathering of AAs and Al-Anons outside of the Indianapolis area, and we spoke at night, and it was dark, and it was around a campfire, and it was sitting on bales of hay. That's much different than this morning, but an Al-Anon message is an Al-Anon message. If I could, for a few moments, I want you to indulge me. As Eloise said, my husband is unable to be with me this trip, and I do miss him a lot, and he misses all of you. I talked to him at 8 o'clock this morning, and it's really strange. In this hotel that you have three or four phones in your room and one's in the bathroom, but it came in great this morning because I was just getting ready to step into the shower and the phone rang, so talked to him from the bathroom, and he said hello, and he misses all of you and for me to have a good time, and he's said that several times since I've been gone. Since Gary was unable to join me today, I invited our three daughters to come with me on this trip because they certainly were a part of the disease alcoholism, the family disease alcoholism. Our oldest daughter was unable to join me because she's going home in July. But two of our daughters are here, and they will be angry, but I'm going to ask them to stand, and that's Patty Harris and Tracy Cooper. And Amy is here with Alex in a stroller, and Tracy was in a stroller when we first came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, because she was 3 months old when her dad went to state hospital for alcoholism. I thought it was also interesting that we had a topic on Saturday morning is sex and sobriety. At least in this Al-Anon's house, there is no sex on Saturday morning. It's always been clean the refrigerator and scrub the floors, so first things first. I know one time I had surgery, and I got home from surgery and figured that I had to have the house clean before I could lay down and recuperate. And I talked to the doctor a couple of days later because I was hemorrhaging, and he said, get your buns on the couch and don't move. But things have to be in order, you know, for me. I'm getting better. But if I had sex on Saturday morning, it'd have to be with somebody other than Brown because he's selling retail and he's out the door at 8 a.m., so on Saturday morning. I want you to know that I came from a very loving, loving family, a large family, a large extended family. I was born in 1941 in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to some parents who had waited 5 years for me. And I was wanted and needed and loved. And the only tragic thing that came out of that whole thing was that my mother died when I was 4 years old, and it took me years to understand why. You know, why did she have to go? And I was very, very angry with God. But my father came from a family of 11 others. He was one of 12. And there were always neat, neat things going on, as I remember it as a child. Picnics in the park, tea parties by my grandmother for all of her granddaughters. When she died, she had 82 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So there was a passel of us. When we had Christmas, it was like a cast of hundreds. There were the in-laws and the outlaws, and I was too young to know that the in-laws and the outlaws did some fighting, but I didn't need to know that. So as a child growing up, I had, although my mother was not there, I did have an extended family, and I was raised by aunts and uncles and godparents at that time until my father remarried. And I was well taken care of, well taken care of. I met Gary in high school as the result of, and he came up to me after the basketball game. We were out in the park climbing on a Union Pacific engine for some reason. I don't know what we were all doing out there. Probably beer was involved, but I don't know. And the gentleman that I was with left for a moment, and Gary came over and took my hand, and we went off to a car, and that was the end of any other relationships, really, with anybody else ever since. We dated for 3 years, and that was kind of off and on, and we didn't get along sometimes. But I thought he was awful cute, and when I met him in high school, he was wore his hair in a ducktail, and it was a little curl down his forehead. And Jimmy Dean was hot then, and so it was white T-shirts, and they stole the silk red jackets that went over those, and the Levi's were real low on the hips, and he was just real cute. For 50s, he was real cute, and certainly stole my heart. And I didn't understand or notice that his drinking was any different than anybody else's. I was not much of a beer drinker. I tried to keep up with the guys. We'd have keggers on the prairie, and I tried to keep up with all that, but could not do that. We were married in 1959, in August 1959, and started on 5 years of active alcoholism, which isn't much in a lot of people's eyes, but it was enough for me, and it certainly was enough for him. 5 years is a lot. One day is a lot when you live with the disease alcoholism. I think alcoholism, the disease, is a dark, lonely, miserable disease, both for the family and for the alcoholic. And I did not know what the problem was. I did not know it was booze. Although I would drive the car down the road and put on the brake and the beer cans would roll out from under the seat and you would get rid of those, I did not know that alcoholism was the problem. I didn't know that alcohol was the problem. I didn't see him drink. He did not drink at home. He went to work and he didn't come home till 2 or 3. But then we were running with a crowd that happened to a lot of people. So it was not unusual. I told the horror stories at the Bridge Club every week. Some of them kind of looked at me like they weren't quite too sure, you know, that was real, but it was real. I wasn't embarrassed. That's just the way it was. I remember 27 years ago, 4th of July, 3rd of July, I was pregnant with Tracy. I was 12 months pregnant, like about 100 pounds. And Gary had been drinking all day. His cousins were in from California, you know how those California people are, and they'd been drinking all day. And we were going to go out to the fireworks at the park, and I did not want to go. And so we stayed at the house, and what we did was boosted me up to the roof and the two little girls, Patty and Carrie, up on the roof. And then after we could see the fireworks show from the park. And when those were done, then it was how we got the girls down, but how are we going to get me down? Because I had a belly I couldn't even see, and he wanted me to come down the ladder, and there's a drunk holding onto a shaky ladder, and I wasn't real anxious. People drove by, and they just kind of looked at the roof, and I really can't remember how I got down, but I obviously got down. But that was just one of those were in the last days. That was the last days. I also had won a pony at the end of the month, gone to the grocery store and some promotional thing, they were giving away a pony, and I still had not delivered Tracy by this time. She wasn't born until the 31st of August, and this was the end of July, and it was Frontier Days, and it was party time. And they called me at 5 o'clock and said, you want a pony? And so they went to the store and signed for the pony, and they delivered the thing, and Gary and his buddies had been drinking all day, of course, and had probably been out to the rodeo. And so they delivered this pony. It wasn't halter broken, but he and his friends, and it had been raining all that week in Cheyenne. It either really, really rains or it really, really doesn't. And we had, like, mud puddles, so I had an unbroken Shetland pony in the backyard, terrified, drunks running around with ropes and dogs barking and kids screaming. And it was just like, what are the Browns doing now? You know, what's going on now? I was one of those Al-Anons that I couldn't take care of my own family, but I could sure turn you into the welfare for not taking care of yours. And did that, both before sobriety and after sobriety. Came a point in my life when I could not any longer live the way I was living. I could not stand it one more minute. And what had happened was, in November, I believe, first part of November, we had gone downtown to have the girls' pictures taken with Santa Claus. And I don't know what was said or what was done, but I know that I was so thoroughly humiliated by the actions of the alcoholic in some interactions with some friends on the street that I could not get home fast enough. And when we got home, I asked him if he would pack his bags and leave. I had no job. I had no plan. I did not know of Al-Anon. The only thing I knew about program at all was the Days of Wine and Roses, and we watched that drinking beer out the driving. I had no idea there was help out there for the family. This was in 1964, November of 1964. Gary left, took his clothes and his blanket and his pillow, and found a beer distributor to live with. I think he thought it was going to be like a match made in heaven, but I don't think the beer distributor to keep the beer in the refrigerator quick enough. And he asked to come and see the children, and I said yes. I never stopped really loving him. I used to get angry. We used to have fights. At least in my house, we had fights in active alcoholism. But I really never, ever wanted to terminate the relationship. All I knew is that the pain was getting worse, and I didn't know what was causing the pain. So when he asked to call and see the children, I said yes. And my mother had been out to see me and to talk to me. Thank God that our parents stayed out of our business. My parents never once interfered in what was going on in our home. They would come out if called, and I called them two or three times towards the end because I was afraid he was going to kill himself, and I didn't know what to do. Really, I was angry enough with him at that time that I didn't care whether he killed himself or not, but I just didn't want to find it. So I'd call my dad out, and he would sit Gary across in the couch, and Dad and I would sit on this couch, and we would talk to him, you know, and just tell him to, Dad would just tell him, if you just straighten up. And as we all know, you just don't straighten up with a disease of alcoholism. And his parents were in South Carolina by that time. They had moved there as a result of a job change with his father, so they weren't seeing the day-to-day results of their son dying of the disease alcoholism. So my mother, Gary came out to see the kids, and previously, a few days earlier, I had been talking to my mother, and she said, you know what's wrong with him? She said, he is an alcoholic like your uncle, like somebody clicked on the light. It made perfect sense to me. So when he came to visit the children, I told him, my mother says, I didn't know you couldn't say that then. Thank God. My mother says that you're an alcoholic and needs to go to the state hospital. And his answer to me was, can your father drive me tonight? Now, I don't know if any of you are familiar with the state Wyoming, but it's 400 miles across. And Cheyenne's here and Evanston's here. And my father couldn't drive him up there. He had taken his own brother up there on many, many occasions, and they took the door handles and the window roller downers off the door to take my uncle to the state hospital. And his brothers did that for him six different times before he died on the way up on his last time. He could not stay sober. He would not do those things necessary that an alcoholic needs to do to maintain sobriety. He would not go to meetings. He would not work with other drunks. He would go to my grandmother's house and hole up and sing opera and drink. And he died an alcoholic death in the back of a Chevy going up to the Evanston, Wyoming. But he was alive when Gary first came in the program. And that's all we knew to do with a drunk. So when my father said he couldn't take him, but he did come out to the house, and I wished I had a picture of this scene, because I had packed everything Gary owned, swimming suits, jock straps, whatever. It went in two suitcases. My father came out to take him to the bus station, and we're all going through our pockets to find money to get him on the bus. Tracy is screaming, baby in my arms, and I got two little ones, 3 and 4, who are holding on to both of us because their lives are being totally disrupted. And it was one of those seemingly bad events that's happening to our lives. My God, would this happen? You have a guy, 25 years old, 26 years old. He's going to the state hospital for 4 months to be locked up. I'm 1 year younger than he is. We got 3 tiny babies. The house payment hasn't been made in 3 months. There is no car because it went up the back end of a cement mixer. The cement mixer stopped and Gary didn't, you know. Thank God he's alive. It was one of those seemingly bad days. But what it really was the beginning of an answer for us. But I could not see that. I did not know that. We called his mother that before he left and told her, said, Billy, you're putting Gary on the bus to go up to Evanston, Wyoming. And everybody in Wyoming knows that there's only one thing in Wyoming in Evanston, and that's the state hospital. And she started crying on the phone, and she said, you can't do that to him. He's going to get out there on the prairie. This is December 2nd. December 2nd, because his AA birthday is December 3rd, 1964. December 2nd, and it's cold in Wyoming, and you don't know what you're going to find across that southern part. And she said, he'll get off that bus, and he'll wander off and get into a snowdrift and freeze to death. And at that point, I could care less. All I knew was my problem was going on a bus. Later, when the prosecutor's office and the bill collectors and the people that had been written checks with no checking account started calling, I was wishing I was up there with him. But I was home. One of the great things that came out of his trip to the state hospital was a telephone call from his counselor telling me there was a program for me also. Because I was one of those that felt, when I found out what the problem was, if he just quits drinking, then we're going to be okay. That it didn't have anything to do with me and how sick that I had gotten being entangled in the disease of alcoholism and trying to keep all this stuff going and all of my resentments and all of my fears. I had no idea that any of that needed to be removed. And so when his counselor called and said there was a program for me, I did not question it, thank God. I really was taken care of. He put me in touch with a lady in Cheyenne, and I went to my first meeting, and there I found my boss's wife. So as a pattern that continued for many years after, I worked for them. Not only did I marry one, I worked for them. And that was a pattern that is not in my life today, but I have worked for many active alcoholics. I never bring them to sobriety, never bring the great message. I just work for them. I like alcoholics. Alcoholics are fun people. They're exciting, certainly. You know, it's not a dull life. Something going on all the time. But anymore, I don't have to pick up pieces. The only pieces I have to pick up are mine. So he went to the state hospital, and I began to go to Al-Anon meetings. He came out 4 months later, and his first recollection of Tracy, who is sitting here today, is she's looking at him over a crib in April, and he does not recall the birth of that child because of the disease, alcoholism. He was a recipient of a free ride to college, and we went over to the University of Wyoming, and that was pretty interesting because I was stark, raving, angry. I was very, very angry. I got in touch with Al-Anon in Laramie. And I have to say, this is from my perspective. This may not have been the truth at all. But looking back, this is how I saw what was going on in Al-Anon, which was we went to one meeting a week, and it was her meeting, and she had started it. And she read the stuff. There was not any literature like there is today. There was not an ODAD book. There was a AAA family book out of Phoenix, Arizona, I believe. And there just wasn't much to do. I did not know any different. And we talked about alcoholics, And that was pretty much that tune, and that's the way I lived for 3.5 years. I did nothing other than go to that meeting, and there was one other gal over there who had married a heroin addict that none of us knew what to do with, and he went to AA meetings, and he was also in school. And I tried to raise the girls, and I must tell you that I did get a hold of a doctor in Cheyenne before we went over at the University of Wyoming that prescribed morphine for me on the telephone. That was wonderful. It was real wonderful for those first 3 or 4 months before we went over to the university, or month or whatever it was. I know Dad used to stop by and he'd say, "Are you on those damn pills?" No. And I was. I just needed those pills to get through the day, because I was living something that I had not lived before. And I was scared, and I had 3 tiny little girls, and Gary's first job while he was waiting to go to the University of Wyoming was running the Coors beer truck up to Golden, Colorado, from Cheyenne to Golden. And they don't take coffee breaks at Golden, Colorado. They take beer breaks. But I was never one of those to worry if he was going to go out and drink. I really never was. I really never was. That was a great gift given to me, that I really never was worried. But certainly going to the University of Wyoming, and in those years, I brought up all the things from the past anytime there was a fight. And it was not easy for either of us to get through all of that. So we get down to Denver. Thank God that's where he chose to go to work. Was in Denver, Colorado. And I ran into another Al-Anon meeting, pretty much the same that I had just left in Laramie. In fact, those that I know the whereabouts of from the Al-Anon meeting, the first one in Laramie, or first ones in Denver, most of those women are now in the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and I find that real interesting. Real interesting. I've always been drawn to alcoholics. So I was going to these meetings for a while in Denver, and nothing was too much different. And we got hooked up pretty early on with Denver Young People's. Now, I was kind of odd man out in Denver Young People's in that, number one, I was married to the original one that I came in with. I was not an alcoholic, but I was completely accepted and loved and needed, I felt, within the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous in Young People's in Denver, Colorado. I was not different because I was an Al-Anon, and it was usually Julie in the AAs, and it was usually Julie in the single AAs, whether it be male or female. And we had a lot of them around our house, and we did a lot of things. The girls grew up in York Street in Denver, Colorado, and they were at that club a lot because we were going to meetings, and they were playing on the porch, and they were down in the basement, and they were up around the fourth floor. Don was talking about the Hand of Hope earlier, and they'd go over there. And a lot of times, though, we left our children. And we were talking about that earlier, the girls and I. Gary and I were not the greatest parents in the world. We're pretty good grandparents today, but we weren't the greatest parents in the world, in that we were going to meetings together and were not taking care of and be responsible for our parenting duties at home, because we got so caught up in what was going on in the excitement of Young People's in the 70s in Colorado that we would leave the children night after night to go to meetings. And then we did fellowship afterwards at Bowers with ice cream and pie, you know. And that was certainly not fair to our children at all. And I've tried to make my amends for that today. It was not fair. The thing that happened to me in Denver that was most important is they got involved with the steps that Alcoholics Anonymous allowed Al-Anons to adapt. You could not help but want to get involved in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous if you were where I was in those years, in that you were surrounded by AAs who were also getting into the steps and doing the workshops. And what I was raised by AAs in this fellowship. The talk that I listened to was big book talk around the tables after the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I actually went to more AA meetings. I did Al-Anon meetings when I was in Denver. That process has flip-flopped since I moved to Indianapolis 13 years ago. But in the beginning, I went to a lot of AA meetings, open AA meetings. In fact, you know, once I was even elected secretary to Denver Young People Sunday night. And I took the job because no AA wanted it. And I had an AA come out there, and he just jumped all over me, and he said, "An Al-Anon can't be a secretary of an AA group." And I said, "Well, then you take the job, you know." But Sunday Night Young People's was as much my meeting as it was anybody's meeting in there. Marceline had come as a result of a convention that was going on in Colorado, and she came up early to Denver because she and Bob had lived in Denver at one point. And she had some amend work to do. And coming up early, I had called her and asked her if she wanted to go to my Al-Anon meeting. And, of course, she said yes. And she came out to the Al-Anon meeting. And after we got through with our meeting, Marceline was asked to say a few words. And what she did in that meeting was to change my life. And it happened that she told us and shared with our group how they were working the steps in the Al-Anon group in Texas. And it certainly wasn't the way we were stumbling and bumbling in Colorado at that time. And so that group that I was a part of adopted those methods to work the steps and to discuss the steps and put them in their life. And that's what changed my life. The AAs at that time in Denver were talking about inventory. And I believe Gary had taken his inventory. And I did not have an Al-Anon that I knew that had written an inventory. And so with Gary's permission, I asked one of his AA buddies if he would show me how to write an inventory, because I did not know where to begin to write an inventory. I didn't know how to start. I had started with a tablet and a piece of paper and tried to go back from the age 3 and write a biography, and that wasn't cutting it. And so he sat down with me and showed me how to write an inventory and the format out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I used for my first inventory. That's what I continue to use for my inventories, because to me, it really gets down to the nitty-gritty of it. And so I think you can see why I am so grateful for the AAs in my life that have always been in my life. And this weekend is always very special to us since we've been here, because Camille comes out of Denver, Young People. Mary Jane's down. Don lives here, of course. Don and Jackie come in from Denver. And it's kind of like old home week, because I still miss Colorado. Guess I always will. But so that's why this is kind of neat. It's the bringing of the clan together, and I enjoy that. But anyway, that's where I started to really work on myself in the Al-Anon program. Now, that's quite a few years into Al-Anon, unfortunately, and I don't advise that for anybody today, and there's no reason for any of that today. Today, Al-Anon has their own 12 and 12. For myself, I use that, plus I use the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We just got through with a 12-step couples workshop that was a little different than any of us expected. And I wasn't real thrilled with the thing going through it, and I was certainly glad when it was over. But what it did was avail me of the opportunity to write an inventory that certainly needed to be written. And I may not have done it left to my own devices. In 1977, Gary and I were doing some heavy-duty praying about his position in Colorado. And the phone rang the next morning. I swear to God, it was the next morning. And Don R. was on the phone. I'd been praying to God, but Don R. answered. And as Gary said, that beat hell out of a bolt of lightning. And so Don offered Gary a position. And it was in the Midwest, and we chose Indianapolis because it was the center of Gary's territory. Not giving any notice again to the lives that were going to be disrupted, and mainly the lives that were going to be terribly disrupted were those of my children. My oldest daughter was a senior in high school. Patty was a junior, and Tracy was finishing up grade school. Now, that's pretty traumatic to put kids out of a school system like that and plump them down in the Midwest. But we were looking forward to it as an adventure, and couldn't wait to get out here, and it was going to be real rosy. It's like, but I forgot that what I did was take me with me to Indianapolis. It isn't that I left any of that old junk in Denver. It just, like, all moved in the truck, and there we were. And we got out there, and Gary is on the road 5 days a week. And the girls aren't real happy. I've got one that's wanting to run home. One that did run home after she graduated from high school. And it was a pretty lonely existence out there. But what I did was I did not cut myself off. I did stay involved in the program. One of the first things I did was go to an AA meeting. I knew there was a meeting somewhere down this dark, dark road. And it seemed awful dark because we were in the country. And I went to an AA meeting in the basement, and I introduced my son. Meetings are like the second and fourth Thursdays of every month. And I said, well, you can't kick me out of this one tonight because this is where I'm staying, because this is where I need to be. And I don't understand how people move across the country without AA and Al-Anon. I simply don't understand. I don't know how you get to know anybody. But so we got involved in the program. And I definitely got involved in the program and started sponsoring people. And in fact, the gal that is my sponsor today, I sponsored her early on because we got involved in beginning some meetings in that area. We began a big book, 12-step study, and the AAs, some of the AAs decided they wanted to close the meetings, so we began an Al-Anon meeting at that church that's still going on today. It's pretty interesting. But I still miss Colorado. And the girls were marrying and moving away, and it was getting pretty lonesome out. And a few of them were moving back. They were having babies and moving back. But about 5-6 years ago, I came home from work one night, and Gary asked me why we were married. And I opted that I loved him, and that's the reason we were married. And he wasn't too sure about that. And what I found out was that he definitely was thinking about leaving. And I had some other information coupled with that, and it darn near tore me apart. And I didn't think I could live. One Saturday, I ended up in the hospital. Gary did leave for a while. In the midst of all that, my father had died. My husband is telling me he wants a divorce. And I am sitting on the couch one Saturday morning, and I have not slept for probably over 24 hours, and I'm smoking cigarettes, and I'm drinking lots of coffee, and I'm not eating, and I lost 10 pounds in a couple of days. And I was watching some religious program, and they started playing the songs from my father's funeral, and I completely lost it. And I started crying so hard that I went into hyperventilation, but I didn't know that's what it was, and I called my Al-Anon sponsor. And I said, my hands are closing, and I could barely call her. And I said, I don't feel good. And she said, is the front door unlocked? And I said, yes. And she called an ambulance for me and rushed it over, and it was kind of a strange day. All I remember is some police busting into the house. And at that time, we had a Doberman pincer and a standard poodle. And the dogs were in the back bedroom locked up. And the police come in. They got there before the ambulance did. And the police were looking for pills because I think they thought I had OD'd. And so they're looking through the kitchen and they're looking through the bathroom. And they opened the door and found the Doberman. And all I remember a lot about that was somebody screaming, oh, shit, and slammed the door. And my son-in-law got there before the ambulance, and my sponsor got there before the ambulance. And my son-in-law, I bent down and told Mark that I had $500 hidden in the freezer and to make sure that somebody knew that that was there. But I actually thought I was dying. And I think what I thought I was dying of was a broken heart. because I could not believe that he wanted a divorce. And I had not accepted the fact that my father wasn't there. I was still, with my father's death, wanting to call him and tell him a good joke I just heard. So I'm an emotional basket case, is what I am. And Patty came and got me, and I stayed with her for 24 hours. And what I had to do was make a decision on whether I wanted to stay in the marriage, if I was strong enough to stay in the marriage by myself. And what I had to do was do a ton of work in this program. And I'll guarantee you, without the program of Al-Anon, there is no way that I could have done it. I was very angry, and I was very resentful. And I had a wail of self-pity and a wail of fear inside. And so I began the work in Al-Anon again. And as a result of that, it took 5 years for that to be completely healed. But again, it was one of those seemingly bad things. And what it was the beginning of a venture, a journey, again, into more healing in my life. Several years ago, Gary and I found ourselves with some unmade amends. And it was suggested that we sell our house and make the amends and live the best way we can when that was all completed. So we put the house on the market and it sold. And we were able to make all the financial amends to the best of our knowledge that were out there that had been hanging for years. And there was just never enough to get them all done. And so if you can't pay it right out, the $5,000 check, I'm not sending $5 a month. And how long can you live with that pain? And we adopt that 25 years into the program, at least for the two of us. And we came to this individually. It was time to get rid of the pain, all of the pain. And there has been so much said this weekend on freedom, so much, because this is when our nation celebrates its birthday of freedom. And so we made the amends. And it's okay. It's okay. I cannot believe sometimes the pain that we hang on to, or at least this one hangs on to, when the easier, softer way is to apply the steps in your life and get the pain out, take a look at it, and ask God to remove it. I cannot believe the things we put ourselves through time after time. There was a mend that I didn't know I needed to make on some things that were said to my mother-in-law 5 years ago, in confidence, in trying to let her know that we loved her and we did not like what she was living in. I said some things to her in confidence that was not kept confidential. And when we went home this June, last June, Gary called his mother from my mother's home. His mother is in Denver in the summer on the mountain. And said that we were in Cheyenne and that we would be up to Bailey, Colorado, in a couple of days. And she says, "You're coming by yourself, aren't you?" And Gary said, "No, what are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, Julie isn't allowed up here." First I'd known about it. First he'd known about it. Nobody knew about that I wasn't allowed up there on the mountain. And that had been something that had been going on for 5 years, but we hadn't been home for 5 years. We hadn't heard this announcement. And I could not understand what was going on, and neither could Gary. He was flabbergasted. So we got down to Denver, checked into a motel, and he went up to the mountain because I was not allowed. And I was very humiliated, and I was very angry, and I was very hurt. And how dare he? And what I said he deserved. And that's the way he is anyway. And it was righteous indignation. Dinner with Whitey in Denver a couple of nights later, and he told me, he said, "You know what you need to do about that. You need to clear that up from your end of it." And I didn't want to hear that. And so that's what I said when we got home from that trip, Whitey told me to take care of it in 24 hours. I did not take care of it in 24 hours. He's one of those fundamentalists in AA. But when we got home, we went into a workshop situation, and there, I needed to do some inventory anyway, right? So I did the inventory. And I took a look at my part of that. I wrote on my part, not on his part of it. And what I was led to do, my sponsor told me to write him a letter. And I wrote a letter, and I asked and told him in there that I was sorry for the harm that I had caused, that I did not mean to cause any harm, and asked him what I could do to make amends for it. Is there anything I still need to do? And that's been said before this weekend. I sent that letter with absolutely, totally no idea of what the response was going to be. I didn't know whether it would be shunned, whether I would get a nasty letter back, whether I'd get a phone call, whether I had no idea. And what I got back in less than a week was a letter of acceptance. And it isn't that I love this man today, but what it is a healing from my standpoint, and I hope from his, in a family situation. Those family situations can be deadly. So I wanted to share that with you, that this program works. And sometimes it's all I can do to write an inventory, to talk to a girl on the phone, because I'd rather not be bothered. Sometimes it's all I can do. But I know that as a result of doing the work, that it saved my life. Because I guarantee you, without the program of Al-Anon, I would be in prison for murder, or I would be in nut house in a straitjacket. Because I was a very angry young woman. My sponsor in Indy told me not too long ago that half measures availed us nothing. It doesn't avail us half results. In the book it says, half measures availed us nothing. And too many times I've done half measures thinking I'm going to get a half result, and I don't. And coming down here this weekend has been difficult. As Eloise said, I miss Gary terribly, and I've not been to a convention without him before. And I hope it isn't because I use him as a crutch. It's because I love him and I miss him. And it's been an interesting weekend for me. And it's certainly been good, I think, for my daughters and me. We had a marathon 5-hour talk on the way down from Indianapolis. And they've had some fun, and I think that they've had some discoveries of their own. They were raised in this fellowship. You accepted myself, and you accepted my husband, and you accepted our three tiny babies into this fellowship. No questions, no financial statement, no family history. You just accepted us and wrapped your arms around us and let us be a part of this thing. And for that, I am grateful. Thank you.